News 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
34 days to go until the polls open across the country. Thank you for counting down with us. We're getting, by the way, some fresh off-the-presses new polling from every key battleground state. And we're going to discuss the tricky and this year tension-filled business of projecting winners and losers on election night. And then we'll talk with a former U.S. State Department official about how a regional war in the Middle East might impact the election. But first, this.
In a vice presidential debate that many observers describe as unexpectedly cordial and very Midwestern, most pundits are giving the edge last night to Ohio Senator J.D. Vance over Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Vance, who is battling some really negative polling numbers from voters, apparently decided to turn on the charm rather than go on the attack. For his part, Walz passed up several opportunities to slam Vance for his past comments about immigrants and women. The conventional wisdom on the VP debate was that J.D. Vance stayed in control for most of the night until Tim Walz at the very end asked Vance point blank if Donald Trump lost the 2020 election, and Vance refused to give a clear and concise answer about his running mate.
A new court filing from special counsel Jack Smith gives further insights to how former President Trump sought to overturn his election loss in 2020. Put simply, Smith says, Trump resorted to crimes. Smith characterized Trump's actions as increasingly desperate, lying to the public, state election officials, and his own vice president, this in an effort to cling to power.
A new poll from the Arab American Institute shows the damage Israel's war in Gaza is doing to Arab American support for Democrats. That group has historically supported Democrats over Republican candidates by a 2-to-1 margin. The new poll shows Donald Trump getting more Arab American support than Kamala Harris by a 4-point spread. Harris is running 18 points behind the Arab American support given President Biden in the 2020 election.
With just over a month to go until Election Day, all eyes are on the seven key swing states: Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and North Carolina. Well, there is brand new polling and analysis out on all of those crucial states. Dave Wasserman, senior editor and elections analyst for the Cook Political Report, is with us to discuss all of that. Dave, give us a quick sort of rundown on what the new numbers show.
Sure. So we found that Kamala Harris was ahead in five of the seven key battleground states, but not by more than a point or two or three in any of them. And then in North Carolina, we found a tied race at 49-49 in a head-to-head between Harris and Trump. And the only state where Trump was narrowly ahead was Georgia, where he was up two. But keep in mind, all of these results are within the margin of error. And there were some positives here for Trump. He still retains leads with voters on handling immigration, although that's 9 points rather than the 14-point lead he enjoyed in August, and on handling the economy, where he's up six. But Harris has made progress, and it remains that her best path probably is in the Great Lakes states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
You know, back in 2016, polling really underestimated the support that Trump had. So how much weight really should we be putting on this, especially just how incredibly tight this particular race is?
You're absolutely right. Polls are subject to error. And we saw that in 2016 and 2020 when they underestimated Trump's support. And he has a lot of outs here, even if you took each one of these results at face value, Harris would narrowly prevail in the Electoral College. If these polls, not just ours, but others, are off by even a fraction of how much they were off in 16 or 20, Trump would win. And he also probably benefits from the fact that there won't be another debate between him and Harris, that his paid communication, which features Harris pretty much straight to camera saying favorable things about Bidenomics, it's better for his case than his rally appearances or his debate performance.
You know, Dave, we've had some other pollsters in the past tell us that it's becoming increasingly difficult to do polling for a variety of reasons, the shift from landlines to cell phones and even many other factors, and even when you try to weigh all these things together. And then there's also the issue of people lie to pollsters, don't they?
We can't say that for sure. We think it's more likely that in 2016, pollsters failed to adequately weight the sample by college education. And in 2020, COVID may have played a role in that Democrats were likelier to take the pandemic seriously. They were likelier to be home and be able to respond to a pollster. But also the common thread here is that Trump's base skews towards voters who have lower levels of social and institutional trust. And that includes trust in the media and trust in polling. So his base can be harder to sample, particularly in years when turnout is very high, as we expect this November, which brings out a lot of more peripherally engaged voters.
We're speaking with Dave Wasserman, senior editor and elections analyst for the Cook Political Report. Curious, with all the polling, can you actually tell if there are truly undecided voters that are still left out there?
There are. And on average, when we look at our national polling average that incorporates 20 other nationwide polls, there are still roughly 3 to 4% of voters who are undecided or say they favor third party candidates. And what we know about those people is that they tend to skew younger and more diverse than the rest of the electorate. They tend to skew a little bit more female in our findings. And those things should suggest upside for Kamala Harris, but they also overwhelmingly disapprove of the current administration's handling of the economy and inflation. And they see Trump's presidency as more successful than Biden's and see him as a better steward on the economy. And they are more likely than other voters to rank pocketbook concerns as at the top, more so than immigration or abortion. So that underscores the challenge for Harris in getting over the finish line in these very tight states.
Okay, so now let's turn to the thorny issue of calling the election. Because, it wasn't that long ago when on election night, if the Associated Press or NBC or CBS would call an election, people said, okay, that's the result. This is the winner. This is the loser. That is not likely to be so easily done this year, is it?
Well, we don't know that because it's possible that these states could overwhelmingly break in one direction, in which case the election could be called within 24 hours of the polls closing. But let's say the East Coast battlegrounds of Pennsylvania and Georgia and North Carolina split, then we could be waiting quite a while on Arizona and Nevada to verify and tally their mail-in ballots, which can be accepted beyond election day as long as they're postmarked by election day.
But it's more than counting,
sure.
Isn't it, though?
Sure.
Because, you have an army of attorneys that have been hired by both camps, by the Democrats and the Republicans all across the country, to initiate litigation at any sign, real or imagined, of voter fraud. So it's more than just sort of counting the numbers and waiting for those numbers to come in, isn't it?
There are bound to be lawsuits filed after Election Day. There already are many instances of litigation over late changes, such as what the Georgia Election Board has passed regarding a hand count of ballots on election night, which is probably going to be tied up in court all the way through to November 5th, and also rules over so-called reasonable inquiries that counties can conduct into allegations of voter fraud, whether they're real or imagined. What we know is that judges typically take very dim views of claims filed by the candidate who's come up on the short end of the stick. And that was overwhelmingly the case after 2020. And I expect that it will be the case again, unless we have a truly too close to call situation akin to Florida in 2000, where it is a matter of a recount and a couple hundred votes either way. But statistically, that's rather unlikely.
Given that you do make projections for Cook on election night, I wonder what you are looking for from those early returns that will kind of tell you which way things are heading.
Sure. I'll be looking at a handful of counties and key states and districts I think we're likeliest to get the most complete pictures early on of North Carolina and Georgia, where the overwhelming number of early in-person and absentee votes will be tallied on election night. And in North Carolina, I'll be watching the Wilmington area. Kamala Harris needs to carry New Hanover County, North Carolina, to win the state. But she also needs to come very close in Cabarrus County, which is just north of Charlotte, North Carolina, a suburb that is trending blue. And of course, there are big concerns over administering the election in the wake of Hurricane Helene in the western portion of that state. We'll see if those are resolved in time for the start of early voting 2 weeks from now. In Georgia, I'll be looking at Baldwin County, which is Milledgeville, to see whether more small town and rural black turnout is on par with 2020. Harris needs to win there. And then in Pennsylvania, Erie County, and in Wisconsin, Sauk County. Those are the bellwethers that I'll be watching from the decision desk.
All right, very good. Thank you so much. That's Dave Wasserman, senior editor and elections analyst for the Cook Political Report.
A possible regional war in the Middle East has become front and center in presidential politics. We will look at the role Israel and Iran will play in the election next on Countdown 2024.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Thanks for staying with us. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. The complicated and dangerous situation in the Middle East was always going to be a major policy point in the U.S. presidential election, but the developments over the last week, from Israel's war on Hezbollah to Iran's major escalation with a ballistic missile attack yesterday, has brought foreign policy front and center in this campaign. For both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, there are just as many opportunities to score political points as there are to offend big segments of voters.
So to go into that in a little bit more depth is Aaron David Miller. For 25 years, he served as an analyst, advisor, and negotiator in the U.S. State Department to both Republican and Democratic Secretary of State. He's now at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. What are the potential pitfalls that any of the candidates can inadvertently walk into, depending on how they answer questions about the Middle East?
I'm not sure it's the candidates' talking points that matter here. The question is, what happens out there? And what are the prospects for escalation and de-escalation? Again, we have to set this in perspective. You know, paraphrasing George Will, who famously said, when it comes to foreign policy, the American public wants as little of it as possible. Mm. And frankly, I think that's right. In an election that's going to be determined by perhaps under 100,000 votes, 6 or 7 battleground states, if you look at where Gaza, the Middle East, and Israel is on the list of priorities for the average American voter, the voting public, as opposed to those who are registered, I think it's very, very low. It does matter to key constituencies. But even there, anything in a close election could tip the balance. So with respect to the Harris candidacy, a major conflagration between now and November 5, in which the U.S. would become involved, is simply going to be a validation of the Biden's predecessor's talking points that the world is on fire, it's in chaos, and when I was president, none of this would have happened. So on balance, I don't see any upside, frankly, for the Harris campaign on this. It's
none at all.
Upside?
Yeah.
No. I mean, someone said to me today that, well, if the United States gets involved in a major military action and it strikes Iran, and somehow it is perceived to be a validation of American power and strength, then it would be an upside. The problem is Middle East wars don't usually go that way. Once you get into them, they get extremely messy. So I don't see any, having voted for Republicans and Democrats and worked for Republicans and Democrats, I see very little upside, again, for the Harris administration. I see Harris candidacy. I see plenty of downsides. You already have a considerable group of quote-unquote uncommitted voters who are unbelievably angry over Biden and Harris's, in their view, preternaturally support for Israel. Those people may not vote for Donald Trump, but they may not vote. And in a state like Michigan, that's important.
I mean, you know, the Biden administration has been trying to get this ceasefire deal in Gaza. Now we have what's going on with Hezbollah and Iran. If you are in the Harris campaign, what are you talking to her about? Is she trying to press President Biden to try to make this stop?
No, she can't press him to make it stop, and he can't make it stop. It's what Lyndon Johnson once said about Vietnam. I don't want to compare the two. Johnson said he felt like a hitchhiker in a Texas hailstorm. Couldn't run, he couldn't hide, and he couldn't make it stop. That's the problem that the Biden administration has faced since October 7th, since the brutal Hamas terror surge, and October 8th, when Hezbollah started, in unprovoked fashion, started getting involved in a conflict and attacking Israel. So along the way, you know, you've seen some of the most intense protests on campus. I went to University of Michigan during the late 60s. I haven't seen that much campus activism over any issue, including the one we were deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan for 20 years. American soldiers were dying. We were killing large numbers of Afghans and Iraqis, many of whom were civilians. And yet there was very little by comparison. So the Palestinian issue has become a touchstone for so many other issues in American political culture. But again, 18 to 29-year-olds in America are not the same as, they're not representative of students at Columbia and UCLA.
Right. We're talking for those of you who just joined us, we're talking with Aaron David Miller, who's at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. We're going to take a break and more with him when we come back.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
Former State Department Middle East negotiator Aaron David Miller remains with us to close out this edition of Countdown 2024.
Let me ask you this. You know, as I'm sure you remember, there was a time when Iran certainly tried and probably did succeed in manipulating the U.S. presidential election at the time of the hostages kept in Iran and the way they intervened to try to make sure that Ronald Reagan won the election over Jimmy Carter, which in fact he did. Do you see that happening again? Do you see any of the key players, Iran in particular, trying to manipulate events in the Middle East so it would have an impact on who wins here?
I mean, I think the Iranians clearly would prefer Harris candidacy over Trump. There's no doubt about it. And if any of these reports about Iranian intelligence hacking into Republican election data and all the rest are accurate, that would confirm that. You know, I mean, the one player obviously is Benjamin Netanyahu, who clearly would have a stake, in my judgment, in seeing Donald Trump president. I don't think there are much that any single actor can do right now that will tip the balance of an election that right now is literally a coin flip. I mean, you have a coin in your pocket, take it out, call Harris on heads, Trump on tails, toss it up and let it land. And wherever it lands, that's the next president. So I come back to George Will's proposition that when it comes to foreign policy, Americans want as little of it as possible. I think that by and large is right. Harvard YouGov did a poll several months ago. They asked 18 to 29-year-olds. Now, this is not, these are all 18, 29-year-olds. And they rated Gaza, and this is during the time of the camp and protests in April and May, as I think the 15th or 14th out of 16 issues with democracy, the economy, healthcare being the three core issues. And you can add immigration to that for certain constituencies. Those are the core issues, not what's happening in Gaza. But as I said, in an election that could be determined by, you know, the number of votes equivalent to the number of seats in the University of Michigan football stadium, Any issue could flip this.
All right, we have got to go.
You guys are right. In that respect, 2024 countdown, the Middle East, you know, could play a role.
All right. Thank you so much, former State Department Middle East negotiator Aaron David Miller.
Tomorrow, we will dive into one of the most complicated and politically charged issues in this presidential campaign, crime rates. And remember, we are here every afternoon, 2:30 through Election Day. And if you miss a show, catch up at 8 o'clock at night. Also on demand, of course, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. All you have to do, search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.